this is Kathy Hart, host of the Health First Radio Show. We have some great guests on for you today. In the first half, we're going to be speaking with John Danilowitz, and he's been speaking about the flu epidemic we had this year. And then in the second half, Sarah Ockwell-Smith talking about gentle discipline. But first, here's Alan with the Health First News.
A new study says adults should limit their alcohol consumption to one drink a day, which is lower than drinking guidelines in the U.S. and many other countries. The researchers warn that adults who exceed the one drink a day limit can expect to die at a younger age than those who do not. Current U.S. guidelines recommend no more than 7 drinks a week for women, but 14 drinks a week for men. A 40-year-old man who drinks as much as the U.S. guidelines allow could expect to live 1 or 2 years less than one who has a maximum of 7 drinks a week, according to the study in The Lancet Medical Journal. The researchers analyzed 83 studies that were conducted in 19 countries and included nearly 600,000 people who drank alcohol. Yoga at school might work wonders for the younger set, new research suggests. In the study, 52 third graders who had symptoms of anxiety were randomly assigned to take part in either yoga or mindfulness sessions for 8 weeks, or to a control group that received usual care such as counseling and other activities from a school social worker. At the start of each school day, the students in the yoga mindfulness group had sessions that included breathing exercises, guided relaxation, and several yoga poses appropriate for children, the researchers explained. Study author Alessandra Bazzano said the intervention improved psychosocial and emotional quality of life scores for students as compared to their peers who received standard care. The study was published recently in the journal Psychology Research and Behavior Management. Night owls might pay a price when it comes to their health and longevity, a new study reports. Folks who stay up late and struggle to wake in the morning have a 10% higher risk of dying sooner than so-called morning larks who are early to bed and early to rise, said lead researcher Kristen Knutson. She's an associate professor of neurology at Northwestern University Feinberg School of Medicine in Chicago. It's important for people who are night owls to learn there may be health consequences, but there may be things they can do to help overcome those problems, Knutson said. There's hope, but it may take some effort. The finding is based on a study of more than 433,000 British adults. As part of the study, they were asked to place themselves into one of 4 categories, definite morning or evening types, or moderate morning or evening types. The new study was published April 12th in the journal Chronobiology International. You might be a drowsy driver without knowing it, and new research finds that can make you more dangerous on the road. People who suffer from chronic sleep apnea are more likely to crash, the study showed. For those with severe apnea, the increased risk hit 123%, while those with mild to moderate sleep apnea saw their risk go up by 13%. And you don't have to have sleep apnea to be more precarious behind the wheel. Among those who don't suffer from sleep apnea, but only get 6 hours of rest a night, the risk of a crash is 33% higher than if they sleep 8 hours every night, the researchers added. Lead researcher Dr. Daniel Gottlieb said, in addition to its importance for cardiovascular and metabolic health, getting a good night's sleep is important to reduce the risk of motor vehicle crashes. The findings were published recently in the journal BMC Medicine.
John Danilowitz earned his Bachelor of Science from the University of Alberta, the Faculty of Medicine. And for the past 12 years, Mr. Danilowitz has worked with consultants for a number of esteemed academic institutions, a global group of scientists, researchers, medical, and health professionals. They are renowned in the field of pharmaceutical, phytopharmaceutical, and nutraceutical sciences, including innovative and proprietary technologies with novel biomedical delivery systems. Currently, Mr. Danilowitz is working with Numera, a Canadian company which does research for and with renowned scientists. Welcome, John.
Thank you, Kathy. It's a pleasure to be here.
Oh, it's great to have you here today. What happened last winter with our flus? We just seem to have a different kind of strain of flu going through our area that lasted and lasted and lasted. What went on?
Isn't that the truth? It's kind of still lasting, isn't it?
It is. It is. There's still people. And people who were very well, like for decades, didn't get the flu, didn't ever even have to worry about it, got hit hard.
It's true. Well, this year's strain is actually called H3N2. And we knew it was going to be rough. We had signals coming up from Australia with them being in the Southern Hemisphere and recording in some cases states of Australia that were recording 5 times the normal level. I mean, back in the H1N1 days when we were all very concerned over that, their numbers were literally five times what they've ever seen, and like I said, at historic levels. And, you know, our health minister, John Hagee, just actually yesterday reported that the reason it was one of the worst seasons ever and still continues to be is because of this particular strain. It kind of caught everybody by surprise, and the fact that, you know, a lot of our team in the know will tell you that it's very difficult to hit the bullseye when it comes to vaccinations, and not that they're not effective. Of course, they can be, as long as that variant or strain doesn't mutate, which is exactly what happened, and that's what he reported on yesterday in the news. So that's one of the reasons. Also the fact that there is a lot of concern over the fact that our immune systems are waning. There's a general consensus in the science community that there are a number of what we call layering effects. So it's not just one reason, it's a number of reasons. I mean, Kathy, last summer, you'll recall when the news came out, which was really late, from the Canadian Cancer Institution, that they were telling us Canadians that they were about to announce a game-changing statistic, which is that one in every two of us will develop cancer in our lifetime.
Wow. And it does that have anything to do with the flu epidemic?
Well, indirectly, in the sense that, you know how you had mentioned at the beginning that, you know, why is it that we're seeing people that have historically never seen, or, you know, they generally don't get colds and flus. Why is this kind of thing happening? It's not just necessarily the strain itself, although the strains are, in fact, getting stronger and more virulent. But it has to do with, you know, a number of cofactors, such as our overall immune system and what can we do to support that. And and you know, Kathy, we were kind of insulated from the size and the mammoth movement of what this virus did across the continent. You know, hospitals were closing down. They were pitching tents outside their emergency entrances to not allow, you know, flu patients into the general population of the hospital. And then, you know, I laugh at that point, but I shouldn't, because really, we tend to forget that colds and flus are very dangerous diseases. We just kind of, in our Canadian culture, kind of brush that off without realizing that, you know, one third of us at any given time, whether it's wintertime or summertime, our population has roughly one third of it has a cold and flu at any general time.
Did we actually lose a lot of people in Canada this winter, you know, seniors or children, or because it just seemed like it was so harsh?
No, we did. We absolutely did. You know, our statistics will come out more towards the end of our reporting season. But just to give you an example, by the end of February in the U.S., over 65 children had lost their lives. And they're looking at the pediatric count somewhere around the mid-150 to 200, which is staggering when you consider the tools that we have in our arsenal to be able to support, in particular, children. But the fact is that when the lungs are overwhelmed with mucus or with some of the upper respiratory issues that we're seeing with this particular strain, H3N2, once the body becomes overwhelmed, it's a real upward battle.
And when do we not just say this is just a cold or flu? When do you think we really need to get medical help?
Well, you know, that's such an individual pull on that question. We Canadians, cold and flu, we spend more than $300 million a year on over-the-counter. There's a tendency to kind of not see the scope of the category, if you will, and the fact is that the general products on the market for this category is really about symptom relief. It never really tackles the question of, well, could we somehow help people's immune system, or is there other products or remedies that can actually help work against the mutating factor of, for example, the virus or viral load. So when you make those, to answer your question, being an individual thing, is that, you know, being an individual call is that when are the symptoms worse enough that you realize that you need to seek medical care is probably the best answer to that.
Mm-hmm.
Because some people will know that, you know, this isn't bad enough, this is a typical cold. And you know, often our hospitals are overwhelmed with the real low level that maybe doesn't need to seek medical care, and so that's burdening the system with those that actually do need to seek medical care. And, of course, one of the gauges is high fevers,
mm-hmm.
That in particular, and also another gauge is if it continues for any extended period of time. That would be another reason mm-hmm. to seek medical care.
Yeah, if just not getting better after a week or two.
Exactly. You know, the general run on flus and colds is 7 to 14 days, which is sad because that's quite a miserable perspective of time.
It's a long time when you don't feel good.
Yeah, every hour is agony, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
So, John, what are some of your favorite ways to prevent and strengthen the system?
Well, you know, when I was mentioning about the layering effect, we're really asking questions like what is the components of stress, and what are the components of diet, and what are the components of rest? And we all know that those are major contributing factors to weakening our immune cell activity. And really, it's our immune cell activity, which is like our army, if you will, mm-hmm. that can decide if a pathogen or something that's entered the body is worthy of its full-on attack. So if your immune cell activity is weakened or waned because of things like diet and stress and of course, nutrition, these are some of the reasons that people tend to float more into being sick more often or having mm-hmm. more colds. And of course, it's also a factor in our children because their immune systems haven't recognized as many of the strains as we do as adults. So that's why you'll mm-hmm. see that children will often have 7 to 10 colds a year before the ages of 5 to 5 and higher.
And that's because they're building immunity to all these viruses they've never seen before.
Yeah. And, you know, there's a lot of controversy around that, Kathy. You know, mm-hmm. It's kind of like that old saying, do we allow our children to play in the sandbox? Well, there is natural immunity that gets built by allowing for things like that. I mean, back in the day, mothers would take their children to the house of the family that was on the block or the community that knew that they had measles or chicken pox. That was just kind of mm-hmm. the way to build natural immunity.
So we could all get it together and stay in bed at the same time.
Yeah, you know. So, you know, to answer that question, there's, of course, you know, you've got your hand sanitizers and all these other things, but we're not sure whether that's as good of an answer as just washing your hands very well, covering ourselves when we sneeze. And, you know, the radius of a sneeze now used to be, the statistic on it was that if somebody sneezed within 5 to 7 feet, but it's much, much broader than that. So, you know, if somebody's ill, they're now saying, please stay home or please keep your kid at home, because that's one of the better ways of not spreading some of these viruses and, mm-hmm. and what have you.
And what do sugar and refined foods have to do with working with viruses?
Well, sugar in particular is known to lower the immune cell response, and actually quite drastically. When they look at some of the independent studies and some of the work that's being done in institutions around the world, sugar is one of the highest rated issues against immune cell activity. And you know, the sad thing is that it's so pervasive in our society today that we wonder why some of these things with children in particular, who are up against sugar laden cereals and some of the rest of these things, are constantly at issue with colds and flus.
Mm-hmm. And we also see a lot of the cold and flu products with a lot of sugar in them, to like if they're a cough remedy or that, they can be very high sugar.
Yes, which is kind of anecdotal if you think mm-hmm. about it, you know. And then you couple that with some of the dyes and some of the alcohol levels that are in them. And actually, Health Canada backed off the regular or up the regulatory status on a lot of the children's flu and cold products, simply because no one was gauging the layering effect of, you know, you will get a decongestant and then you'll get a cough syrup and then you get something for fever. But all of them have very similar chemical profiles. Mm-hmm. So if you're layering all three of them, we've created a level of toxicity in children below a certain age. And so Canada lifted the age levels. And actually, most of the West did at the same time. I think Canada and the UK did it almost in sync. And then the U.S. followed months later. But it's for that reason.
That's right. John, this is fascinating. We're going to have to go to a quick break. When we come back, we're going to learn more about how to bolster ourselves against these viruses.